okay? Oh, no. Hello? Now it's not working. Hello? Now all of a sudden it's working. Was it something?
It's probably just a simple
thing.
Turn it up too high for this to come.
Hello? Can you hear me in the back? No.
Screams. Yeah.
Sure.
I think you turned it off.
It says on.
That probably is dead. Doesn't have any battery. I'll change the battery.
Okay. So while Dr. Moshowitz changes the battery, I'd like to get started. My name is Dr. Heiklin, and I'm going to talk to you a little bit about developmental biology. Until now, Dr. Moshowitz has spoken to you a lot about how cells work, okay? And I'd like to talk to you a little bit about how an organism is built, okay? And there's a lot of different questions in developmental biology, okay? And so because I have only two lectures, I've chosen to actually talk to you about cell fate determination, okay? Obviously, developmental biology has a lot of other topics that I won't have a chance to get to.
Get too close to that.
Okay. Oh, my drink. Okay. Okay. Like I said, lots of other topics in developmental biology. If you're interested, so I teach developmental biology here at Columbia. Feel free to come and take the course, the lecture course. I also teach a lab course, so depending on how interested you are, you can come and take either or, okay? Or both, also a possibility. So back to what we're talking about today. So cell fate determination. So how does a cell, okay, become a specific tissue, right? Whether it's a cell within the liver or a cell within the lung. And I like for students when they start to talk about this to kind of think about how they decided what they wanted to do in life. It's not so different, okay? So I'd like you each to take just a second to think to yourself, what kinds of things did you think about when you were trying to decide what to do with your life? Okay, I'm going to give you 3 seconds to think about that. It's not actually as simple as you think it is, right? And a lot of you may not even have figured it out totally yet. But if you're in this class, you probably are interested in some way in some kind of biology. So that's a start. So what kind of factors go into figuring that out? Well, first of all, you'll see when you learn in school different subjects, which of them interest you. That's number one, okay? You'll also probably think a little bit about the physical requirements. Now, most of you think to yourself, what do you mean, physical requirements? I know for me, when I was thinking about what I wanted to do, I sure as heck did not want to spend my nights awake in the ER, okay? So that's a physical requirement, okay? I have twins, and I spent about 10 months not sleeping. Well, that was enough for me of not sleeping. Okay, so everybody makes their choices, you know, different ways. It also has a lot to do with what jobs, there's a lot of room for, there's a lot of supply and demand within society, right? So for us, of course, when we talk about the cells deciding their fate, it's not going to be society, it's going to be an organism, but it's not so different, okay? So a lot of times, let's say, for example, you decide to be a PhD, like myself, and you go through and you start to be a PhD, and the truth is that every lab that has one professor usually has about 10 PhDs. Well, that already tells you that they're not all going to get jobs as professors, right? But they may do other things. There's a lot of other things out there that you might not even realize when you start, okay? So, for example, one of the things you can do is go do patent law, okay? That's a job, right? And that has a lot to do with biology, but you do have to go get a law degree, okay? But there are some other things I think that you guys know even less about. So, for example, you can go with your PhD and work for an advertising agency, right? And help pharmaceutical companies present their data either to other doctors or at conferences, okay? It's another job that most people don't even know about. So you kind of look around to see what is available, okay? Same is kind of true of cells, okay? So if you think about it, it is really kind of a complex thing. And then finally, there is this issue of talking to other people, okay? The cells, and I put this in quotes, talk or interact with other cells in the body, okay? The same way you do. Now, there's a simple way of, you know, sitting down and talking to your friend, oh, what should I be? Okay, that's the simple way. But there's also pressures from society. Your parents want you to be a doctor, right? They want you to be a lawyer. Who knows what they want? They want you to be an artist, right? And so there is a lot of interaction. The same thing is true here in cells. So I want, as we're talking about this, for you to keep that in the back of your mind, okay? So, when I talk to you now about how cells decide what tissue they will end up, okay, being in and what their function will be, in order to do that, I first need to talk to you a little bit about the human life cycle. And you'll find that on the first page of your handout, 19A. And I would like to mention to begin with that this is officially lecture 17 because you guys don't count the two tests, okay? But I have called it 19 not to be confused, okay? That really should be 17, okay? Just so you won't be totally confused. Okay, so the first thing is the life cycle. With fertilization, where the sperm fertilizes the egg, and then a zygote is created. This divides into many cells. Each of these cells is called the blastomere. And this, this many cells together is called morula. This then forms what is called a blastocyst. And it contains two types of cells. And you'll notice that this is actually the first time when we're getting two types of cells. So our first cell fate decision has kind of occurred here, right? So until now, all of these cells, right, had the same potential. Now we have two types of cells. The outer ring of cells are called the trophoblast. And they will become the embryonic side of the placenta. These inner cells that are shaded are called the inner cell mass, which I will abbreviate ICM. After this, until now, when the cells divided, they just lay down next to each other. At this point, cells will start to move relative to each other. This process is called gastrulation. And you have a ball of cells now where the inner layer, okay, will be the endoderm. The middle layer will be the mesoderm. And this outer layer will be the ectoderm. Please realize this is made up of cells. Okay? And so what really characterizes gastrulation is that the cells are now moving relative to each other. So you have major cell movements. You then get an embryo. And I've drawn the head very large on purpose. At this stage, your head is huge, okay? And at this point, cells arrive at their proper destinations, ready to start making organs. This lasts up until about 8 weeks. You then have a fetus. And here you refine the organs and gain a lot of weight. That's important too. In your last month of pregnancy, the baby gains a huge amount of weight. And then finally, the adult. Now, I started off by saying that I was going to talk to you about the human life cycle. And yet, what I've drawn here looks pretty linear to me, just a long straight line, okay? So we're missing actually one very important part of this that makes it into a cycle, and that is actually the gametes. And they are created by meiosis. And these are the only cells created by meiosis in this picture. All the rest are by mitosis. Okay, so now I'd like to look a little bit more. This is the general scheme. I'd like to look a little bit more at the cell fate process and how potent or how many different fates the various cells can become, okay? And to do that, that's also on 19A, okay? You start off at the zygote with one cell that is totipotent. Meaning that it can become any cell of the embryo. It starts to divide, which you see there at the morula. Into two cells. And now because I cannot draw all the cells of the organism, I will only draw a subset of the cells. Okay? So this is two of the cells, but please realize that the morula has more cells than two. Okay? So these cells here are called pluripotent. And these would actually be, for example, like the cells of the ICM, right? The inner cell mass. Okay, so for totipotent, this is true of both the zygote, because it can become, of course, any cell of the embryo. And it's also true of the early morula. And we'll talk about that in a moment, okay? So what does it mean to be pluripotent? So pluripotent means you can become any cell of the embryo, but not the placenta. So you'll notice I wrote here ICM. Remember I told you that first decision has been made. Those ICM cells, right, can become any cell of the embryo, but not what this outer ring, the trophoblast, becomes, the placenta. And so that's the definition of pluripotent. This cell then divides again. Okay, and we'll give rise to, let's say, mesoderm and endoderm. This cell will also divide. And So now some student will ask me, does this cell only become endoderm and mesoderm, and this cell ectoderm and ectoderm? No. Both of these cells can become all three germ layers. So I will draw hash lines so you understand that. Okay, because they're pluripotent, so they can become any of the germ layers. Okay? Now, to save room, I'm only going to use as an example mesoderm, okay, and talk about now what comes from mesoderm, but please realize I could do the same for endoderm or ectoderm, okay? So now, for mesoderm. And please also, once again, realize that obviously this one cell divides into two, and then that cell divides again and again and again, and I'm going to show you a number of different derivatives that's from that multiple proliferation events, okay? Or cell divisions. So it divides, for example, into the gonad field, okay, which will eventually become the gonad, also into the heart field, which becomes the heart, bone field, becoming bone, and all the various parts of bone, and then blood field, becoming blood. And now please realize, when I say becoming blood, this would be white blood cells, red blood cells, etc. Okay? So I've told you at the beginning, it's totipotent. Then the ICM is pluripotent. And the mesoderm can become a number of different types of cells, as you can see here. We call that notipotent. It can become multiple lineages. But please realize that multipotent has various degrees, or it can vary in the number of cell types you can become. So multipotent is true of mesoderm, endoderm, and ectoderm. But it is also true, okay, here of the gonad field, right? Or of blood cells, right? We talked about the blood field being able to become many different types of blood. You can sit a little too loud. Let's try to turn it down. See if that's better. Can you still hear me? Good. Okay. Now, I'd like to go back to our analogy when we talked about deciding our careers, okay? So if you think about it in some ways, okay, these cells have decided what organ they're going to become part of, okay? Kind of like we do. So when we start off totipotent, this is like when we were... You guys have trick boards. Okay. Like when you were in elementary school, okay, that is when you could become anything you wanted to, okay? In high school, you probably decided, okay, that you were going to be either in science or not, okay? I'm assuming most of you decided to be in some kind of science. Okay, once we get down here to the germ lines, this is kind of like that you are doing your undergraduate. After your sophomore year, you have to pick a major, okay? When you get down here, you're doing your PhD or your MD. And finally, you may become a doctor where you're very specified, okay? And please realize that as you go down this continuum, the number of different cell types you can become decreases, okay? The same is really true of your decisions in your career. Okay. So now, we want to try to get a little bit of an idea, because I've said to you decisions, right? But what does that mean? What is behind those decisions? And so before we knew very much about molecules, some experiments were done, okay, where we looked at frog embryos. And what we did is we took a frog embryo early on, and this is composed of many cells, so I'm just going to draw a patch like that. And we let it develop into a tadpole. And we didn't do anything to it. Normally, this region would become back. And this region would become belly. So this would become cells from the back, and this cells from the belly. And what we saw is that depending on when we... Okay, so now let's try to... Now they wanted to do some experiments. And they wanted to see what would happen if we took cells from a region that normally is back, and we moved them, or transplanted them to another embryo. And what we saw was that it, depending on when we moved it, or how far we had progressed in development, okay, we got different results. So this is our second embryo. And if we took cells from the back that were normally going to become back, and we move them to a region where these cells, if we draw the tadpole, not much of a tadpole, all right, to a region where these cells would normally become belly. So there's two possible outcomes. One is that they would actually now start to behave like cells or express the proteins that were needed in order to function like the cells of the belly. The other option is that they would continue to function like the cells of the back. So, scientists, you know, actually ended up getting both of those results depending on the timing of when they moved these cells. And so they came up with various categorization of how to talk about these differences. And so we have various steps. The first step is called specification. The second is determination. And give me 1 second, I will define these. And the third step is differentiation. Okay. So differentiation is when the cell actually functions, both its function and its structure are of that cell type. Okay? So you actually have that both the structure and function of this cell type. So then what is the difference between specification and determination? Okay? So, when you move this, okay, if it is willing to now, or it is actually becomes then cells of the belly, right? We would say that it has been specified, but not determined. In other words, it hasn't gone down this progression so far that it won't turn back. Okay. Once it has gone down this progression far enough, if you transplant it from the area that would become the back to the belly, it will not change its fate. It will still express the proteins that could give it the phenotype of back. Okay? So what does this mean? Determination really means that it cannot change its fate. Whereas specification is that it has already been begun down the pathway, but if it now actually comes in contact with cells of a different area that quote, quote, can talk to it or induce it to do other things, it will change its fate. Okay? So,
will change fit.
I'm just going to turn this down a little bit more. I hope I won't totally lose you. Am I still okay? You can hear me?
Great.
Okay. So, let's now try to take that and integrate that, this classification that we've made, right? Specification, if you didn't do anything to it, it would continue to become back, okay? But if you actually transplant it to another embryo in a different place, it will change its fate. If you waited longer, okay, and these cells had already gone down this cell fate determination pathway far enough, they would no longer change its fate. How do we integrate that in to this scheme? Okay? So every time you go from one level to the next, okay, you actually go from totipotent to pluripotent, you actually need to both specify, so that's number one, and number two. So you need to specify and be determined. Then as you progress from the next one, pluripotent to a germ layer, you once again go through stages one and two. And once again, that's true when you go from here to here. You go through one and two. And now you'll notice that all of these cells up here, when you look in the microscope, will all look the same. Okay? So they actually, you'll notice, I'm telling you, they go one, two, they become pluripotent. They specify and they determine, they become multipotent, right? They specify and determine and they become a little bit less, but they're still multipotent. Only at the end, right, when we go here and we finally become the type of cell, let's say it's a white blood cell, do we actually go through all three stages? So one, two, and three. And so what does that mean? Only in this last stage do we have overt changes so that the cells actually look different, so that's the structural, and function differently. Whether that is various structural proteins or enzymes, cytoskeletal proteins, okay, that make this cell, okay, function differently and also look differently. So, for example, you know, heart cells would look like a heart. I'm just going to draw it like that. I know it doesn't look like that, right? But, for example, bone. It would start to look like a bone. Okay? Red blood cells start to express hemoglobin. Well, they actually lose their nucleus, so I will draw it out. Okay. Right? So only in this last level do we actually have this differentiation. So the cells look different. Remember, if you looked in a microscope, all of these cells would look the same. But obviously, they're not the same, right? There's obviously a difference because the number of different cell types they can become is different. So what is the difference? Well, I know that Dr. Moshowitz has spoken to you about the fact that all cells contain the same DNA, but they express different proteins. Now, I realize there are a few exceptions to that. We won't get into it as far as expressing, you know, having the same DNA, but they express different proteins. And that's a very important idea here. So let's talk about that a little bit. So in other words, let's look at what is the molecular or the molecules that are being turned on in this process of cell fate determination. I'm just kind of doing a Venn diagram of the proteins expressed in liver, those proteins expressed in lung, or the proteins expressed in heart. So some of the proteins that are expressed in liver are only expressed in liver. And some of them that are only expressed in lung are only expressed in heart. There are some proteins that will be expressed both in heart and lung, some that are expressed in heart and liver, some that are expressed in liver and lung. then there is this third group, which is those proteins that are expressed in all three. We have a special name for those, for the genes that encode those proteins. We call them housekeeping genes. And these are, for example, cytoskeletal proteins that you need, or they're enzymes for metabolism, right? Every cell needs that to live. These are things that are true of all cell types. What we're really interested for this cell fate determination is actually those proteins that are different, as opposed to these which are common between all cells. So in order to talk about that, I'd like to go back to that first decision that I told you that the cells had to make back up here when we talk about the two different cell types that form the ICM versus the trophoblast, which will become the embryonic side of the placenta. That's really the first decision. How does that get started? Okay, because once that gets started, then a lot of the other things follow. And the answer to that is, I don't totally know the answer, but I have a little bit of an idea about what's going on. So it turns out that there are two transcription factors and this is on 19A. Now, I'll remind you that transcription factors are proteins that interact with the DNA to regulate transcription. So here are two transcription factors, and I'm going to draw on. They are important in determining the trophoblast and the ICM. So what do they do? From the zygote until the 8-cell stage, they are on in every cell. So every cell of the 8-cell stage expresses both OCT4 and CDX2. At the 16-cell stage, something special starts to happen. So it turns out that OCT4 is expressed and pushes those cells that express OCT4 down the cell fate to become ICM. On the other hand, expression of CDX2 inhibits the ICM cell fate. Expression of CDX2 protein drives the cells down the trophoblast cell fate, causing those cells to express the proteins that are necessary to become the embryonic side of the placenta. OCT4 inhibits that fate, the trophoblast fate. It actually causes the genes that confer the ICM cells with their phenotype. Okay? And then to reinforce this loop, CDX2 inhibits OCT4, and OCT4 inhibits CDX2. And that's actually at the transcriptional level. Okay, so they inhibit each other's transcription. Now, someone will ask me, okay, but what decides whether or not a cell will keep on OCT4 or will keep on CDX2? That's where I have to admit I don't know the answer, okay? On the other hand, I have some guesses. One of the possibilities is that it's just random, okay? That's one possibility. Another one of the possibilities has to do with how this looks. It turns out that when you have a moruli at the 16-cell stage, okay, that all of the outer cells, there'll be eight of them, okay, and all of the outer cells will express CDX2 and become trophoblast. And all of the eight inner cells will express OCT4 and become inner cell mass, or ICM. So one of the possibilities is that any cell that is in contact with cells on all of the sides, or those inner cells, all continue to express OCT4, and all of those who do not have cell contacts on all sides continue to express CDX2. In other words, the position determines whether you will start to upregulate OCT4 or upregulate CDX2. Okay? So all of these, and I should shade them in because that's how it is on the handout, all of these in the middle will be ICM. Okay, so that's really our first decision that gets made at the beginning. But there are a lot more decisions, okay, or changes in protein expression that need to be made in order for us to progress all the way down this cascade that I've drawn up here. Okay? So I can't obviously talk about all of them. I'm going to pick as my example, heart, and talk to you a little bit about what happens, what's the molecular mechanism that enables a cell to become part of the heart. So we saw that OCT4 was very important in the ICM. And it turns out that for cell fate determination, transcription factors like ICM are very, like OCT4, excuse me, are very important, okay? And we call them master regulatory genes. Okay, which I will abbreviate MRG. Okay, remember they are all transcription factors. And we just saw that for the ICM, the master regulatory gene was OCT4. The master regulatory gene for trophoblast is CDX2. We're not going to follow that lineage at the moment. We're going to look now at heart, which is derived from ICM, so we're going to talk about it. Okay? But please realize that it also is a master regulatory gene that turns on all the proteins that are necessary to confer cells with the trophoblast cell fate. Okay? So ICM. Heart is derived from mesoderm, so then I'm going to write mesoderm. And the master regulatory gene for mesoderm is called brachyury, which I abbreviate BRY. And then mesoderm leads to heart muscle. Okay? And the master regulatory gene for that is NKX2.5. Now, I'd like to now that I've told you that, I'd like to integrate that a little bit with our three different steps, specification, determination, and differentiation. So we go through specification and determination as we progress from ICM to mesoderm. Once again, we go through specification and determination . But here we actually become heart muscle. And so in addition, we also differentiate. Okay, just to try to help you integrate these various schemes together. Okay. So you can see now that there, when we start talking about how we get the various cell fates, that one of the big players is transcription factors, okay? But there really are three levels, three factors that are very important, okay? So the three factors are transcription factors. The second one is histone modifications, which I'll get to in a moment. And the third one is DNA methylation. Okay? And it turns out that these two are actually pretty intertwined. Okay? So, I've told you about how these transcription factors are important. Well, it turns out that various histone modifications can control which ones are expressed at which time. And that's what I'd like to talk to you about now. Okay? I'm realizing that I actually skipped ahead, so I'd like to go back for one moment. I'd like to first give you an example of how these transcription factors work before I move on to histone modifications, okay? So, I'm going to use as my example of how these various transcription factors turn on, I'm going to use as my example heart development, okay? And so if we look at heart development, and this chart that I'm going to draw now is actually in the notes if you happen to have brought them. If not, I'll draw it out, no problem. So, if we look at the various transcription factors, CDX2, which I've already talked to you about, OCT4, so CDX2 is the master regulatory gene for trophoblast, OCT4 is for ICM, brachyury for mesoderm, NKX2.5 for heart. And now I said to you that when you then finally turn on NKX2.5, you then actually turn on, because you do differentiate, various structural genes that will cause those cells to actually function as heart muscle. Okay? And that's various structural genes, whether that would be, for example, cardiac actin, but also other transcription factors, for example, GATA4, okay? And then those transcription factors may then also turn on other structural genes, for example, myosin. Both important components, both actin and myosin, important components in the heart muscle. And so what we see is that this master regulatory gene that does the differentiation, okay, turns on all of these various structural genes, okay, is this last master regulatory gene that turns on, and it's at the head of the pyramid to actually confer that cell with its cell fate. Okay? So when I draw my chart over here, now I'm going to include in this the various structural genes, so cardiac actin, and myosin. And then we're going to look at their expression. And if we look at totipotent cells and then pluripotent cells, and then in the mesoderm, and then in the heart field, right, the same way that I talked about the cell fate pathway up top, and then in the heart, let's look at which master regulatory genes will be on when, and then when finally those structural genes will turn on. So when it's totipotent, I've already told you that from the 1 to the 8 cell stage, CDX2 and OCT4 are both on. In the pluripotent ICM, OCT4 stays on. Brachyury then is expressed in the mesoderm. Now you'll, and then finally, in the heart field, we have NKX2.5, and then it stays on in the heart. And so what we see is that those master regulatory genes that go through steps 3 and 4, go through specification and determination, actually turn off after they're done, okay, specifying that tissue type, right, OCT4 and brachyury turning off, whereas that master regulatory gene that turns on all the structural genes that confer the structure and the function of that cell type actually stays on. So, for example, NKX2.5 remains on in the heart, but brachyury and OCT4 turn off. And then cardiac actin here would be expressed only once you get the actual heart muscle cells here at the end. And the same is true of myosin, because that's when you actually get differentiation, right? And when the cell actually would contract. So you need actin and myosin. Okay. So now, what regulates these various master regulatory genes, and I will remind you that all of these master regulatory genes, right, these are master regulatory genes, right, are all also transcription factors. What actually turns them on and off as we progress down the cell fate pathway? It turns out it's various modifications to the histones. Does everybody remember what the histones are? Okay, let me remind you. So, if you remember, DNA is wrapped around various histones. So if this is the DNA, okay, we have this, the eight histones, right? There's histone 2A, 2B, histone 3, and histone 4, and we have two copies of each. Okay, so those eight proteins together make up this nucleosome, and the DNA is wrapped almost two complete times around it. And the tails, or the ends of the histone proteins, actually hang off, or hang out, or are exposed. And we can have various types of modifications to these tails of the proteins. So one of them that we've talked about, that you've talked about in class, is phosphorylation of these histone tails that's important in the condensation of the DNA for mitosis. Okay, remember Dr. Moshowitz spoke about that? And there are other types of modifications. The one that we're really interested in now is methylation. So these tails can actually be methylated. And the one that is important here is histone 3, if I draw it. Okay, this would be the tail. This would be the N-terminus. We're interested in the methylation of two different amino acids, right? This is an amino acid chain. The fourth amino acid. And to make things easy, we have taken all 20 amino acids and given them a letter. In this case, we're talking about lysine, which we've denoted as K. Now, someone will say to me, why not L? It would make my life so much easier. Well, leucine already took L, so we're going to use K. Okay? So you just have to remember that. So, this is the fourth amino acid, not the fourth lysine. Please do not get confused. Okay? And the other one we're interested in is K27. And these can be methylated. Right? Remember. Okay, so these can get methylated. CH3. And so what we see is that if we have K4 methylation, we have an increase, and I'm just going to abbreviate T script being transcription, we would have an increase in transcription. And if K27 is methylated, we will have a decrease in transcription. And that's associated with this increase in transcription opens up the chromatin, and this K27 methylation condenses the chromatin, decreasing transcription. Okay, so this is actually because of a change in the in how condensed the DNA is. Okay, when it's open, it's more exposed, transcription is easier, that's associated with K4 methylation, and vice versa. So, I'd like to look at, make a little chart. Thank you. I'd like to look at what kind of histone modifications we see when we look at these master regulatory genes in different tissues. So the first one is NKX2.5, we know is on in the heart. So what kind of methylation? Would K4 be methylated or would K27? K4, okay. So K4 plus K27 minus. What about OX4 in the ICM? K4 would be?
Plus.
Plus, okay. So K4 would be methylated, and K27 would not, because OX4 is expressed in the ICM. Okay? Now, how about OX4? Is it expressed in the heart?
No.
So what would be methylated?
K4.
Okay. So K4 minus K27 plus. So this is what they actually, when they look at this, this is what they see. But then they had a very interesting result. What you'd expect for NKX2.5 in the ICM, since it's off, is that you would have K4 not methylated and K27 methylated. That isn't what they got, okay? What they actually got is that K4 was methylated and K27 was methylated. So bivalently methylated. And they kind of have, you know, postulated that this is that these cells are poised to go either way. They still have the potential to turn on NKX. And so they have both methylated. So then what would happen in mesoderm? So in mesoderm, once again, NKX2.5 is not on. We know that from the table we drew, okay? And yet it still has the potential to turn on. Mesoderm, right? Remember, heart comes from mesoderm? So it still has the potential. If I had written here ectoderm, which it, heart doesn't come from, then you would no longer have the potential to turn it on. You would have actually K27 methylated. But that isn't the situation here. Now we're talking about mesoderm. So we still have the potential. So once again, K4 plus K27 plus. What does that then tell you about OCT4 in mesoderm? Does it have the potential to be on? No, it's been turned off, right? We know this from our chart over here. In mesoderm, OCT4 is off. Okay, and isn't going to turn back on. So that means that K4 or K27 is methylated. Okay, so K27 is methylated and K4 is not. So now I'd like you to take 2 minutes and fill in this part of the chart with your neighbor or with yourself, whatever you'd like. Okay, take 2 moments to do that. Yeah. hopefully that at least gave you a chance to think about it and maybe integrate it a little bit in. So brachyury, right, is not on in the ICM, and so you would get methylation on both. It is on in the mesoderm, so plus minus, and it turns off in the heart, so minus plus. Now you will have an expanded version of that in the problem set, right? The problem set for this is chapter 14, it says hyphen, okay? In there you'll see an expanded version of this. You'll get to try all the various possibilities, okay? Okay, so I've told you that which master regulatory genes are on is affected by the chromatin structure in this way, okay? So if we look back at the three things I said affect gene expression, we talked about transcription factors and we talked about histone modifications, and now I'd like to talk about DNA methylation. Now, this one isn't as intertwined because, as you notice, the chromatin modifications that I spoke about directly affect the master regulatory genes, okay? Methylation affects both some regulatory genes but also some structural genes, and one of the classic examples of that is the globins, which I'm going to talk about today. And so my example of that with the globins, so if you remember, hemoglobin in your blood, right, is made up of two alpha chains and two beta chains of globin. And the beta chains that you use, or like beta-like chains that you use, okay, in the embryo are different than the beta chains you use as an adult, okay? And that's because you're not breathing air, and so your affinity for oxygen has to change, okay? You're right, you're getting oxygen from through the placenta from your mother, right, as an embryo. So, when you, if this is relative globin expression, okay, and this is a time, okay, with this being birth. What we see is that early in development, you express epsilon globin instead of the two beta chains, right? So you'd have two alphas and two epsilons. And then you start to express gamma. So you'd have two alphas and two gammas. And then after birth, two alphas and two betas. And in fact, this picture, I've noted the URL, in this is from Albert's, okay? I've noted the URL in the notes. Feel free to look at it if you'd like. So you've got this change in expression of these structural genes, right? So downstream of the master regulatory genes, these are structural genes. And this change in expression is actually regulated by DNA methylation. So let's look at how that happens. So if I draw, they're actually on the same place on the chromosome, okay? They're all together, the globins are clustered together. If I draw them on the chromosome, and this will be, this is weeks, okay? This is at 6 weeks, and this is at 12 weeks, okay? So at 6 weeks, primarily epsilon is expressed, and at 12 weeks, gamma, okay? So if it's the same chromosome, this is where the open reading frame for epsilon is. So open reading frame. Okay? Upstream of that is the basal promoter for epsilon. And here is the open reading frame for gamma. And upstream of that, the basal promoter. And early on at 6 weeks, we actually have transcription and translation of epsilon. So I'll draw here a protein product, right? And we do not have expression of gamma. It turns out that what is keeping it, that is inhibiting its expression, is that this region is methylated. And now these lollipops are my symbol for methylation. And it turns out, because normally in mammals, where we get methylation is when we have C followed by a G, okay? And please realize that that means on the other strand, it would be CG. That wherever we get a methylation on the top strand, we're going to get one also on the bottom strand. We need to draw these lollipops in both directions. And this actually ends up being important for when the cell divides, because when the strands separate, at least for each cell that inherits that chromosome, one strand, at least the older strand, is actually methylated already. And there's an enzyme that comes and recognizes that and just methylates the other strand. So in this way, this methylation can also be remembered. What then happens at 12 weeks? Once again, this is the open reading frame and the promoter. Promoter, open reading frame, okay? Now, we're getting gamma expressed. Transcription translation, here's our protein. And so we actually get methylation or lollipops of epsilon. So here we can see the three different ways, or three different main ways, that gene expression is controlled as we progress down the cell fate determination pathway. Now, I have kind of skipped over one important thing here, and that is that not all cells progress down this pathway at the same speed. Some cells do it slower, okay? What do I mean by that? So for example, we have adult stem cells. So they, when you're 10, have not finished this pathway. Whereas other cells, like your heart cells, finished it, okay? There are a few stem cells in the heart, but very little. And you know that because when you have a heart attack, if enough of your heart is damaged, you die, okay? It doesn't manage to have enough cells to replace those and all. So you have a little cell stem cell population, but it's not for massive coronary events to recover or anything like that. But you do have some adult stem cells that have gone down this pathway much slower, okay? Most of them, right, are not sitting way up here at the top being pluripotent. We don't, as adults, have pluripotent stem cells, right? What they are doing is they're sitting around here. A great example of that is stem cells for blood. And that's because we need to have a million new red blood cells every day. Okay? How are we going to get those if we don't have adult stem cells for them? Okay? And so that's a naturally occurring adult stem cell. But it's not like a pluripotent stem cell that can become like the cells of the ICM, that can become any type of cell of the embryo. It can become only a few different types of blood cells. So it is called multipotent, right? Not pluripotent. And it's not even as multipotent as is the germ cell. Like when you have an endoderm, it can become many more things than can become a stem cell for blood. So where do we have stem cells in the adult? It's most of those tissues that turn over rapidly in the adult. It's blood, okay? And the truth is, unfortunately, the way you can figure out what it is all of those things that go wrong when you have chemotherapy. Chemotherapy kills dividing cells. Okay, right, you have cancer, they want to get rid of the cancer cells, but unfortunately it gets rid of all dividing cells. Okay, they're putting some chemical in your body that kills anything that's dividing. So it's blood cells, that's why you feel so weak. Okay, it's your hair stem cells, right, you're always busy growing hair, and so you have hair stem cells, so your hair falls out. Okay, it's the lining of your gut, which is constantly being renewed. That's why you're busy throwing up when you do chemotherapy. So anything that you can think of that goes, you know, that gets killed and makes you sick when you do chemotherapy, those are your adult stem cells. Now, there's a couple others that we don't notice so much when we do chemo, are skin stem cells and sperm stem cells, okay? But those are really the biggies, right? Because those are things that we constantly need new supplies of. So those are really our naturally occurring stem cells. But there are a few others. Those are the naturally occurring ones. But you'll notice, and in the news nowadays, there's been a lot of discussion about ways to get stem cells artificially. Okay, so ways of what we've talked about here, methods of manipulating and creating stem cells. Oh, and before I continue, I should talk a little bit about what's the definition of a stem cell? When I say that, what does it mean? Okay, so the stem cell has two important features. One is that it is self-renewing. And the second is that if you give it various molecules to differentiate, you now know what differentiate means, right? Express all of the various proteins necessary to confer a function of a specific cell type, right? If you give it those signals, right, or the induction, it will differentiate into this cell line, into the cell type that you have caused it to become, right? So those are really the two big types of stem cells. So what we see with stem cells, if we start off with a stem cell and it divides, frequently it gives rise to another cell, but then it also regenerates or renews itself. So this cell now may go off and become, let's say if it's blood, you know, red blood cell. And this one may become a white blood cell. But you still now have another cell to divide again and do this again. So it keeps a copy of itself. Here it had various signals that were given to it to cause it to differentiate into red blood cells and white blood cells. And so on 19B, I've showed you here some. I've showed you here throughout development some places where, or some stages in development, where cells have been taken to try to get, by manipulations in the lab, right, stem cells to use for various uses. And I will speak about a number of those different uses next week, but I'd like first, before that, to look at this and talk about the various places where these cells can be taken from. So you'll notice the first one that you see on that page is in the blastocyst, the ICM is actually the source. When the people talk about taking embryonic stem cells, they're actually talking about taking ICM cells. So in other words, where I've written up their ICM, that is equivalent to embryonic stem cells. That's what they want to take when they do those experiments. So back here, where I've written ICM, I'm going to write equals embryonic stem cells. I abbreviate that as ES cells. Okay? So those are pluripotent, and so they have a huge capacity to become any cell type of the body. Now, not the placenta, but any other. Okay? The next one that you see on this page is to take cells from the fetus. So fetal cells have progressed less down this pathway. And here, actually, they talk about one of the cells, which we talked about at the beginning, is a great exception to the flowing down this pathway, is they also talk about from the fetus, you could take the early gametes, right? Because the gametes, especially early on, don't flow down this pathway in the regular way. And so they're pretty early in development, right? Because, of course, gametes, if you do the right things, can make a whole human being. Okay, so that's another possibility. Obviously, with humans, there are ethical issues with these, right? And then finally, it shows that you can take adult stem cells, which usually there are less ethical issues with. But in addition, I don't know, if you look at the newspapers and New York Times Science and other places, you can see that there are a number of other places that people are experimenting trying to take stem cells from. So you'll notice it's listed here, the umbilical cord. It's a good source of various types of blood cells, okay? Another one is frequently they want to take from the placenta or the amniotic fluid, right? Which is the fluid that is the baby is bathed in, okay? Menses, so when you have the uterine lining, When it comes out, there are a few stem cells that are lost with that uterine lining, because every month a woman loses her uterine lining, means she has some stem cells that make that lining every time. Baby teeth, when they fall out, are thought to have a few stem cells, okay? Liposuction, right? So I think liposuction is the best, because you got two positives, right? Not only do you get to get rid of your fat, right? Perfect, okay? But then you get to use it, right? So I think that like that should be the way we do it all the time, right? Because perfect, okay? Two things, price of one, okay. And then the last thing that's written here is about frozen IVF embryos. So if it's an embryo, right, you could take out its ICM, and that would really be embryonic stem cells, okay? So this kind of gives you some ideas about where we can get stem cells from. And I'd like to next time talk to you about some examples of what we have done with that. There even are some that aren't listed on here, because many of you have probably heard in the news where they talk about the fact that they can actually now take a skin biopsy and make pluripotent stem cells, right? So make stem cells. So those are some great things I'd like to talk to you about on Thursday. Great. Thank you.